Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Phyllis Pricer. I'm your hostess for the Higher Dimensions here on BBS Radio. I'm so glad to have you tune in again today. And we have another really great, interesting guest for our show. Remember, you can call in to BBS Radio at 1-877-876-5227. And our guest today is Richard Salva. He is the author of the book, Soul Journey from Lincoln to Lindbergh. Welcome, Richard. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Phyllis. It's a pleasure to be here.
How do you like to be addressed? As Richard or...
Richard is fine.
Okay. So, I did read your book as I do with all guests. I read the material and I talk to them first and try and get a hold on what they're like and how they came up with their material and their background. So, could you give us a little of your background and how you got involved in writing this particular book?
I'd be happy to. About 32 years ago, I first got interested in reincarnation. My book is about reincarnation. The title is A Soul Journey from Lincoln mm-hmm. to Lindbergh, Revealing the Mysteries of Karma and Rebirth. Mm-hmm. And about 32 years ago, as I say, I got interested in reincarnation when I got onto the path of yoga, the yogic path of self-realization, as mm-hmm. taught by Paramahansa Yogananda, as many mm-hmm. people know him as the author of the spiritual classic, Autobiography of a Yogi. And so I was interested in reincarnation at that time. It was an interesting concept, a fascinating concept. I think I was interested in it the way that most people are interested, wondering who I had been in the mm-hmm. past. Oh, maybe I'd been a hero since I'd been on the spiritual path. Maybe I'd been a saint. Maybe I'd even been a heroic saint.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it just became something that was worth puzzling over and thinking about. And whenever things came up, wondering what sort of karma I had for them to be happening in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't much more than that. Until about, about 15 to 20 years ago, I started to have these experiences that came almost on a daily basis that made reincarnation much more real to me.
What were the experiences?
Well, I had a number of experiences that they were experiences that would sometimes they would come in dreams, sometimes it would come just a real understanding and very subtle realizations that would occur during the waking hours, during the events of my life.
Could you speak up a little bit? I'm having a hard time hearing you. I'm sorry.
Yes, no, that's fine.
Okay.
And is this better?
Yeah, that's better. Thank you.
It's
long distance. What can I tell you?
Yeah, I think I had my mouth was too far away from the phone.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, I'll tell you one of the most dramatic experiences I had.
Mm-hmm.
I went to England. I had spoken with a psychic who said that I'd been at a particular battle in England, and I thought it'd be interesting to go there. And so I had arrived with a friend of mine who I hadn't seen for a long time, and we were very good friends. And we were just having a great time just talking and laughing and joking. And we came up alongside this old stone wall.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly, from one moment to the next, my whole mood shifted, and I was plunged into this mood, and it was like a 180-degree shift, and I felt like that character in the Little Abner cartoons with the cloud.
Oh, yes.
You know,
the cloud. But Joe... The one who had a cloud over him all the time?
Yes, exactly.
Joe, I call it.
Yes, exactly. And it was just very, it was amazing how quickly the shift happened. And I didn't realize it then because there was nothing to mark it. But
right.
I just stepped onto this whole battlefield and I didn't realize it. And so I turned to my friend and I said, you know, I could actually hardly speak. I said, would you mind if I went and did this battlefield and toured it by myself, you know, if we did it separately, and he was very gracious and said that'd be fine. So there is a walk that you can take around this battlefield where
uh-huh.
you can go like about three-quarters of a mile, I think, around it, and they have these these signs or dioramas set up so you could see this part of the battle happened at this time of day and move on to the next one and so on and so
forth. Which battle was this?
This is actually the Battle of Hastings, which is in
Battle of Hastings. Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Wow, that was a very important one in English history.
Yes, yes, and in some ways in world history too, because it helped us create England as it is today. In some ways, that it was its birth almost. But,
yes,
but
that was 1066.
Yeah, no. That's right. Yeah,
1060. Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. Okay, go ahead.
Alrighty. So yeah, William the Conqueror and all that.
Yes, yes, and, yes, yes. So, the Doomsday Book.
Yes, yes.
And you want to know something very, very interesting?
Yes.
My family is written in the Doomsday Book.
Oh, is it really?
Yes. As a matter of fact, one of the women, and it was very rare that women were written in there.
Yes.
Because women were basically allowed to hold power. But one of the women in our family was held written in that book as a landowner.
Wow.
Go ahead.
Wow, that's really interesting. So there's personal interest there.
Yes, absolutely. Go ahead.
Well, instead of taking this guided tour that I might have taken, I just walked out into the center of the battlefield, which at this time now is a sheep meadow.
Okay.
And there's a little hill there, and I just sat down among the sheep, and while those sheep were nudging me, I sat there for about 45 minutes and wept. And it was as if I could see, and I haven't had an experience like this before or since. It was a very singular experience.
Right.
But it was as if I were seeing a moving line drawing superimposed on landscape. And I could see a battle taking place
exactly
in front of my eyes as soldiers.
Exactly. You were watching it unfold because there is no time.
Yes.
So and you literally were watching that battle.
Yes, it was inside of me. I was watching it inside of me, and it was out there too. But I saw soldiers cutting at each other, horses rearing, shields going up, spears going up, and the whole thing. And I saw somebody die before my eyes.
Right.
And I just released this emotion that I felt like I'd been holding for 1,000 years. It was very, very powerful.
Emotional.
Yes.
Catharsis almost for you, yes?
Yes, yes. And I think it was tied into what the psychic said. She said that she thought that I didn't understand why I had gone there, why I was part of the battle, why we were there, etc. And so it was a very emotional thing. But it was a very freeing thing also. And in fact, I recommend that people, if they can, and depending on their situations, to be able to take what I call these past life pilgrimages, just to be able to free themselves of these things that are maybe holding them back on subtle levels or not so subtle.
Right.
But anyway, so that was one experience, and it was probably the most dramatic of them. But I had experiences that went on for quite a long time, and I was learning a great deal through them about reincarnation and karma. And I was feeling like I wished I had some way to share what I was being given with others. And as a minister, I would often break off in a Sunday sermon and talk a little bit about my experiences or talk a little bit about karma and reincarnation. But I didn't feel like I was really giving the heart of what I was able to share. And about 10 years ago, I was on an airplane flight heading to the East Coast, not too far from where you are. I was heading to Baltimore.
Oh, yeah, right up the road.
Yes, and I was sitting in that airplane, and I was in between writing projects. And as a minister and a spiritual person, I thought that I would pray for guidance. So I closed my eyes and meditated, and then I just opened myself up. I said, give me a project, something that I could really dive into and share what I've been given. And within less than a minute's time, the idea for this book came to me, and it was a very strong thought. It wasn't a vague notion by any stretch of the imagination. And this thought came saying, you remember what you had read about something that Yogananda had said about Abraham Lincoln? Why don't you study that? And what Yogananda had said, this was published in a book written by Yogananda's disciple, Swami Kriyananda, in a book titled The Path, in a chapter called Reincarnation. He said that Yogananda had said about 60 years ago or so, dating from now, that Abraham Lincoln in a past life had been an advanced Himalayan yogi, and that he was reborn as Charles Lindbergh. And as I was sitting on that airplane, I suddenly became very excited by this thought. I thought, here are two men whose lives, you know, are so deeply chronicled. They're so famous, and everything about their lives has been scrutinized. I thought, if there were evidence in their lives to show that Lincoln had reincarnated as Lindbergh, then it should be possible to find it. And also, since at that time, I had been teaching and practicing the teachings of Himalayan yogis for over 20 years, it should be possible for me to spy those connections also between both of their lives and the ancient spiritual science of yoga. So I dove into it, and I'll tell you, this book just really took over my life for quite a long period of time. I felt like I was a surfer riding a wave, because all these ideas and connections were coming to me. I was doing studies, but I was getting ideas at the same time. I was working in a store called East West Bookstores, a famous metaphysical bookstore here in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area. And I had a little microcassette recorder, and I didn't want to work on it sort of blatantly during store hours when I was working there, so I would go into the bathroom and just, you know, say something into this microcassette recorder. And then 5 minutes later, I'd be running to the bathroom again. I think people were wondering what I was doing.
if you needed to see it.
Yeah.
A holistic healer for a moment there, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it was just amazing, all the connections I was finding. See, I didn't know how much I would find. I didn't know what I would find. I thought I might find a number of interesting connections, but the number and the quality of connections I found just blew me away. I discovered nearly 500 fascinating similarities and parallels between the lives of Lincoln and Lindbergh, more than 200 between Abraham Lincoln and the ancient spiritual science of yoga, and more than 100 between Charles Lindbergh and the path of yoga. And it was just, there was so much there, and I didn't even put in the book everything I discovered. I tried to put in the best of what I had found, and just because I didn't want it to be so long that nobody would buy it and read it. And so it was just a very powerful experience to go through putting all these things together. And these were not the sort of connections that everyone has, you know, that, well, you know, that they both like, say, if it was nowadays, they both like pizza and Beatles music, you know, which practically everybody does. You know, these were things like mental obsessions and physical habits and characteristics and ways of connecting with people, and even on the spiritual level. A lot of people now might be surprised to hear that Charles Lindbergh matched Abraham Lincoln almost exactly on a spiritual level, but I went through, see, the ancient teachings of yoga are spiritual teachings. And so when you're doing a comparison of people with those teachings, you're really looking to see how spiritual they were.
And that's very true.
Yes. And when you have a graph, say if you have a graph, and at the top of that graph, you might have a line up there for someone like Christ or someone like Buddha or Yogananda. One of these great souls might be way up there, and your average person would be, you know, toward the middle or so on. Abraham Lincoln was pretty high up there. Just comparing now, what we're comparing now is not just one thing he did here or there, good or bad, but his habits on a daily basis. Because this is what Yogananda said. This is how we are actually judged as far as how far we've come spiritually, is what we do, our habits on a daily basis. And so when comparing them, I was amazed to see that Abraham Lincoln and Charles Lindbergh, they both had a, if they had lines on this graph, they would be pretty much almost exactly the same line. They were that close. They had the same virtues and almost pretty much exactly in the same proportions. And this is the essence of who we are, our spirit, you know, our spirituality. This is really the deepest sort of connection. You could have personality similarities. You can have physical similarities. But when you get into this very, very deep level of our being, it's, it's, you know, as I say in my book, you know, mass murder won't be reborn as an angel. You know,
that's right. There's you know, work on the soul level that has to be done first.
Yes, exactly. It takes effort and time and attunement and openness to grace and many other factors for a soul to change that dramatically. But what you have here is you have two men that are shown to be up there spiritually, two men who could very well have been following a spiritual path so deeply in a past life that you could see its effects in their lifetimes as well. But it was just a fascinating project to work on, and it was just amazing to be part of it. And I feel like I just channeled this thing out to the world. There are times when I felt like I was almost taking dictation, you know, and it was just like, you know, I had a number of editors, and sometimes they would change something, and I would just change it back because it was like, well, that wasn't what I heard, you know, and I wanted to be true to what I had heard. Other parts, it was like that story of the sculptor who was working on creating, who was asked, how were they able to sculpt such a beautiful elephant out of this block of marble? And he said, well, I just cut away everything that wasn't an elephant.
Right.
Yes.
Well, that's the way Michelangelo works, you know.
Yes, that's right, too.
Yeah, and in fact, any great artist or sculptor, they see the form in the marble. The marble tells them what it is they are to create.
Yes, and, you know, I've seen some of his later work. Did you see those ones where I forgot the name of them. There are a number of them, but you can actually see they were unfinished, but you could see
pieces of art when he died, yes.
Yes, well, but there were these ones where it looked like they were trying to come out of the marble.
Yes.
Yeah, you know the ones I'm talking about.
Yes. Isn't that fascinating?
Yes, amazing.
Oh, I love artwork, and you're so lucky to have been able to go to Europe and to participate. Yeah, my as I said, my family traces back to that era.
Yes.
And actually, on both sides of my family. Mm-hmm. And so I find it absolutely fascinating, which is, I guess, why I feel strongly drawn to England.
Yes. Well, I think it's the families that we are drawn to be born into.
Right.
Oftentimes, it's because we feel a connection with them. We feel a connection with their history. There's something that they represent. There are souls that are part of their family right now that we know from before, various other factors like that. And being in tune with the family's history, there's more reason to it than just genetics.
Well, absolutely. No, there's a, you know, you are you familiar with the Life Between Lives?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do that with hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
It's mind-boggling at all the intricate planning that is done when you come back from time to time.
Yes.
And very often you will find that people who have had one lifetime where they were not, where I would say, let us say they were maybe ugly ducklings, and they have followed their soul's purpose.
Yes.
And maybe because they did not have the physical beauty, so they could concentrate on being, concentrate on pursuing the spiritual aspects over the physical.
Yes.
And I think Lincoln probably was one of those.
Yes. Well,
and so this time he was able to choose a body that many people found very physically attractive, the women at least.
Yes.
And
yes,
men were drawn to him too, which is also a very interesting concept.
Yes.
That there wasn't the jealousy there. There was the camaraderie and the admiration of a good person.
Yes. And so people, actually, when he became famous, Lindbergh, he would do his radio speech. His first radio speech was in Washington, D.C., right underneath the Washington Monument.
Right.
And he gave this very brief speech, and some of these radio announcers who, you know, very kind of tough, media.
Tough audience.
their stock and trade was a really, you know, tough media sort of people.
Oh, yeah.
They
broke down. Don't be kind to your brother.
Yes. Well, they broke down and wept at this man who came, this young man, because something about him just evoked it out of them, just made them weep. And when he was done, he just made a very brief speech about his trip, and it wasn't some great work of speech for history.
Yeah.
But afterwards, everyone turned to each other and said that was like the Gettysburg Address, because it was very brief. But it said so much to everyone who was listening to it. It didn't have the polish of Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, but somehow they all thought of the Gettysburg Address after he made the speech.
It's the spirit of it that came through, I would imagine.
Yes, and there were so many connections like that with Lincoln throughout his life. that it's just beautiful to see. For instance, when after he made that speech, he went to made a tour of America in the an air tour with his airplane, the Spirit of St. Louis. And one of the places he was invited to was Abraham Lincoln's hometown of Springfield, Illinois.
Right.
And when he stopped there, he was asked by the reporters, what does it feel like to be here in Springfield? And he said, it feels like home. This was Abraham Lincoln's hometown.
Uh-huh.
And there were just these many connections throughout the life. But again, the essence of it are these deep connections of personality and of spirituality, mm-hmm, and so on.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is great. Are you writing any more books now?
Yes.
Have you moved forward in time? And what's grabbed your fancy this time around?
Well, I'm working right now on a book, an e-book actually, on how to make a past life pilgrimage for people who want to dive into their past lives, who want to feel the connection there and perhaps want to heal something from their past, just like I had described when I had gone to England and had, mm-hmm, that experience there. It's just to help them out to understand how to go about it, how best to deal with whatever comes up and so on. So I'm,
mm-hmm,
working on that right now and looking forward to that coming out. But I have a number of other books as well, but that's what I'm working on at the moment.
Okay. And so you're teaching what? Self-regression, self-hypnosis?
Yes, actually, the way that I recommend for people, if you're interested in learning about your past lives, I recommend for people to learn how to meditate, because in meditation, you're taken beyond the physical. You're
right
to realize that you are a spirit that is untouched, really, by the cycles of birth and death,
mm-hmm,
and that from that place, if you can go deep within yourself and you could step away a little bit, just a little bit away from this particular body, this particular experience of life.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see that it's a role that you're playing on the stage of life, as Shakespeare said. Then,
mm-hmm,
you can see also, well, this doesn't define who and what I am. I am spirit. I'm playing this role, but I'm something much more than that. And you could see, oh, I also played that other role, and I played this one as well.
Mm-hmm.
These things start to become apparent to you,
mm-hmm,
as when you start to meditate deeply. I found, as I mentioned before, that they started to become apparent to me, something that I wasn't really expecting, but just started,
mm-hmm,
to happen on, as I said, practically on a daily basis. And this is a very good way to go about it, because it's experiential. It's something that you can experience for yourself, and it can be very helpful for people,
mm-hmm,
too.
Are you familiar with Joseph Weed's books?
No.
He wrote about the Rosicrucians and how to look into past lives, using meditation in a sense, but sitting in front of a mirror.
No, I haven't heard of that book.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's still in print or not. It's how I learned to do this, and I know that you actually do call up your past lives,
mm-hmm,
and you can see them in your mirror.
Yes.
And you see what you look like then.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's a form of meditation, but of looking into your own eyes.
Yes.
And it takes concentration. It truly does.
Mm-hmm.
As meditation, and you ask yourself questions like, what is the best, what lifetime, previous lifetime has the greatest impact on me this lifetime,
Yeah.
What should I learn, and ask these questions of information that you want to know,
mm-hmm,
and you gradually see your face literally change,
mm-hmm,
and
yeah,
you are looking at who you were in another lifetime.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That must have been a very powerful experience when you experienced.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, at the time, I had two smaller children when I first did this,
mm-hmm,
and my daughter, they were watching TV, and my daughter was wondering what I was doing in the bedroom,
mm-hmm,
so she snuck in real quiet like a mouse, and she watched me just looking at myself, and then she cried out, and it brought me up. She said, Mom, you turned into a bald man.
You mean she saw it in the mirror, or she saw
she
it?
She saw it in the mirror. She was watching me watch myself in the mirror, and all of a sudden I was a bald man. Well, I had the life I was going into was that of a Tibetan monk.
Ah, yes.
So so that was the lifetime that was really helping, going through my, helping me through that period of my life at that time.
Yes.
But I think other lifetimes come to the fore as well,
mm-hmm, yes,
at different stages in your life. Does that make sense?
Yes, and I think often what happens is it's because our experiences in those lives have to do with what's happening in our lives right now.
Right, yeah.
And that it's helpful for us to, if we're able to handle that knowledge, to be able to know, you know, what was the cause of this, or at least one of the causes.
Yeah.
And then from that, you can be able to do something with it. The way the image that I'd like to use is that we're walking down a jungle path or mm-hmm. a forest path, and at one point you get hooked by this big, ugly thorn, but you don't realize it because
right.
there's a long creeper vine at the end of the thorn.
Uh-huh.
So you keep walking along, and then at one point that vine gets taut, and at that point you start to feel the thorn digging into your flesh. Now, if you continue to walk forward, it'll just wound you even worse than the wound is right now. But if you were to walk backwards along the way of the path that you had come, back toward where you had received this, just far enough for you to unhook it, then you would be able to go forward freely, and you would be free of that difficulty. And
that's an interesting visualization.
Yeah.
It is my understanding, however, that the soul itself will only allow you to be given the information that is in your best interest.
Yes.
That it will, your soul will not permit information that comes to you until and unless you are ready for it.
Yes.
So that your own protection is built in by the soul itself.
Yes, but I do also know people who have taken that information and have sort of obsessed on it so much that they're not living their lives right now. And this is an important point for people who are interested in past lives. We're not talking here, and I don't think you would be either, about just trying to live in those past lives now, because spiritual growth happens right here and now. And,
absolutely.
Yes, and healing.
Absolutely. And yeah, you can, but I would think also, you know, again, we have choices.
Mm-hmm.
You know. By the way, of what denomination are you a minister?
Well, I'm a minister of the Ananda Fellowship, and this is a church that was started by Yogananda's disciple, Swami Kriyananda. And we practice the teachings of self-realization that Yogananda taught.
Mm-hmm.
He said that what he came to bring to America when he came in 1920 was original Christianity as taught by Christ and the original yoga as taught by Krishna. And so it's a combination. It's actually a teaching that believes in the underlying unity of all religions, of
mm-hmm.
all true faiths, and that our teaching shows that unity, particularly between these two great spiritual paths of
mm-hmm.
Christianity and yoga.
Okay. I'm sorry for the interruption on sirens. I apologize. Hold on. Anyway.
That sounds like they're coming after us.
Yes. We have, it seems that we have, sorry. I'm sorry, there seems to be a lot of activity. We
yes.
seem to have a caller.
Oh, good.
Welcome to the show. Oh, no, I guess, oh no, someone's calling in on my line. We're going to ignore that. Sorry about that. I've left instructions. People are not supposed to call, but they persist in calling when they shouldn't. I can't help it.
Oh, well. You're just a popular woman.
Well, as long as it's not while I'm doing my show, I don't care. But do remember, people, that we do have call-ins if you want to talk to Richard Silva more about either the religious aspects or reincarnation or some interesting past life flash you may have had or something of that nature. Please feel free to call in at 1-877-876-5227. And your book is for sale where?
Well, they can get it through bookstores and on Amazon, but I also have a special offer on my website. So
okay, give your website.
The website, the easiest way to go there is to type in LincolnReincarnation.com. Lincoln Reincarnation is one word. As I mentioned, there's a special offer there, including a free past life reading through numerology, a free past life consultation with myself, There's been quite a number of it's like $132 worth of a bonus gifts for buying it on my site. So
I should try that, huh?
Yeah. Sure. But anyway, so yes, LincolnReincarnation.com.
Okay, so you give past life readings as well?
Actually, not myself. I have a colleague who does the past life readings through numerology. But what I do is a consultation for people who have already had some sort of past life experience and feel that it's connected with their life right now, would like clarity and help in working out exactly how to get that healing or resolve it with an issue or whatever it might be like that. Or also for people who would be interested in being able to tap into their past lives and would like some help with that, I can help with either of those things.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fabulous. So I hope some of our listeners will avail themselves of this.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a great idea. So if anyone wants to call in, please feel free to call in and ask and talk to him or get more information. I've had, have you had some other, you were talking about, other past life experiences that sort of have jumped you up and, shaken a stick in your face to get your attention?
Well, I think there was one in particular that I might talk about, which happened around the time that I mentioned with the experience in England. It actually happened before I went to England, before I even planned my trip to go there. I was sleeping, and in my sleep, I found myself in an attic room that had a high ceiling, a high vaulted ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And up there, way up, I was looking up, gazing up. I think I was lying on the floor of this attic room and gazing up at the ceiling, and among the rafters, I saw floating up there two people. At that time, I was actually asking in meditation, where are these sort of experiences coming from? What what's happening here? And about that time, I had this dream. So I saw these two people floating up there, and they were dressed in costumes or clothing that I knew was old-fashioned and very old-fashioned, but I didn't recognize it. You see, I'd never done any studies of history, whether European or otherwise, and so I didn't recognize them, but I could they just looked old-fashioned to me.
Yeah.
And about a month or two after this, a friend gave me a book to read from the time of the Tudor period in Henry VIII, Elizabeth I, sort of thing. And I started to read this, and while I was looking at the photographs in there, I saw, these are the sort of clothing that these people were wearing. It was exactly that type of clothing. And I was reading in there about a certain monarch who sent somebody to go somewhere, and it was at the very bottom of the page, and it said, actually it was about Elizabeth I. She said, Elizabeth I sent so-and-so to, and then you turn the page and you go to the other page, And as I had been reading before at this point in the book, I was starting to feel more and more familiar with what I was reading, and it was like it was reminding me of something that I used to know. And when I was turning the page, it was like in my mind I said, I remember that. She sent so-and-so to...
Tower?
No, some town in England. I couldn't even give you the name now. But
okay.
It wasn't a large town, one that you know. It was a name that I don't think I'd ever heard before, but it just popped into my head. And I turned the page, and there was the name of that same town right there. And I practically dropped the book. It was like, this thing is haunted. But it wasn't the book that was haunted. It was myself that was haunted. Because we're all really haunted by our past lives. And we're not even aware of it. In my book, Soul Journey from Lincoln to Lindbergh, as I mentioned, nearly 500 connections, reading it helps the reader to understand how reincarnation can impact them on pretty much of a daily basis.
Right.
Because you see so many different ways that they were connected. And just to give you an idea of some of the connections between the two men, both men lost sons while centered in the public eye. As I mentioned, this is not something that everybody goes through. Both viewed their sons' remains after their sons had been dead for weeks.
Who is this now?
Lincoln and Lindbergh.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Both men fell in love with young women named Anne, got engaged to them when he was 26 and she was 22. Here's a physical similarity. Both had light blue eyes set deep in the sockets. And both men studied people as if from a distance. Both were military men at heart, although neither man had much of a military career.
Right.
Lincoln was shot behind his ear, and Lindbergh was afraid of the sound of gunfire. In fact,
right.
Yogananda talked about this. He talked about the fact that the thoughts and feelings that we have right when we leave our bodies can have a very big impact upon our next lifetime.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
And how we pass at
yes.
the time of our death.
And in my book, I realized something even more than that. It's not just the thoughts you have right while you're leaving your body, but the thoughts that you have that day can also impact
right.
you, even if it's hours beforehand, because there were a number of things that Lincoln did in the last day of his life and said and was thinking about that were recorded, because especially, you know, everybody wanted to know this after he had been assassinated. Everyone was fascinated with Lincoln. And so people who knew him were reporting what he had said and done. And then you see sort of the resolution of each of those things or those thoughts and feelings being reincarnated very strongly in Charles Lindbergh, even as a boy. There's one example that Lincoln was thinking about returning to Illinois in the last day of his life. And now
right.
he was actually feeling a sense of longing for Springfield, the longing for...
Going home,
yes,
by the way.
Yes, going home in that part of Illinois and the prairie. And, you know, it's rather interesting that before Charles Lindbergh made his historic flight across the Atlantic, the thing that he was doing was he had a job carrying the airmail, and the route that he actually had to help design was between St. Louis and Chicago.
Uh-huh.
He was basically flying on practically a daily basis over the heartland of Illinois and over Springfield, which is Lincoln's old hometown, just seeing, you know, he said he actually saw it so often that he eventually got sick of it, but there was this, that desire, you know, was fulfilled in spades, you know.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, just you can imagine the spirit of Abraham Lincoln in an airplane flying over the land of Lincoln, where Lincoln had lived. There's a beauty to that image. And also it's interesting, too, just again, all these little connecting, this sort of interspersed, they're interconnected in many different ways. This was one of his Lindbergh's first jobs, was carrying the airmail. And Abraham Lincoln, one of his very first jobs, was being postmaster. And
right.
he was postmaster in New Salem, which is almost directly under the route that Lindbergh carried the airmail.
Mm-hmm.
And you just sort of see these sort of things.
Similarities.
Yes, all just interspersed throughout the book, and they intertwine. And you can really get a sense for how many karmic and other sorts of past life connection things are going on
mm-hmm.
for us on just a daily basis. It's really quite remarkable.
It is absolutely fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
But does this hold true across all lifetimes, or is it just certain ones that this occurs with? Because, for example, you know, different lifetimes have different purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And... for example, in one lifetime, I'm trying to think of an example, someone who was perhaps born a Jew and died in the World War II
yes.
may well come back as a female in another religion
mm-hmm.
in order to avoid having that type of death and or coming back in a lifetime where they become females if they've taken life, and this time they give life by coming back as a woman and giving birth to children.
Yes, yes. We sometimes have these different experiences. And also in my book you see where there is this choosing process that we have before we go into a body. Are we going
oh,
to
yes.
be male? Are we going to be female? I mean, there's
yeah, the life between lives experience, right.
Yes, there's different, very different lessons that can come from choosing one or the other, and sometimes one would be more advantageous for our growth, our inner growth, and so we
mm-hmm.
choose one over the other, or we're very attached to one over the other, and we'll choose it even if it's not for our best thing, because we have such a strong desire for it. But, you know, this... you see that between Lincoln and Lindbergh, too. Sometimes there were things that he did that were the same, and then there were things that you could see he had a negative experience, and then in his next life he even had in mind, I don't want to do that, and as Lindbergh said or wrote, you know, I don't want to do whatever it might be, and he chose to do something different. For instance, Abraham Lincoln had this, he had a very loving connection with his wife, Mary Todd, but there was also some difficulties there. Mary had emotional issues that she was working on throughout her life, and she would used to get these bad headaches. And when she took this medicine for those headaches, I think it was called laudanum, that actually had opium.
Oh, I know what laudanum is. Yeah. It was used a great deal, and it's addictive, and it's mood altering, actually.
Yes, and you can imagine how it affected her emotions. So there's one image that was recorded by one of Lincoln's neighbors in Springfield that I included in the book of Abraham Lincoln running through the back yards of Springfield, dodging and weaving because Mary Todd had the meat cleaver in her hand and was running after him until he realized that the neighbors were singing and sort of grabbed her and said, let's go back inside. But so there were these she sometimes could be... she had
challenging?
Yes, it could be challenging, and she had these emotional issues. And so Charles Lindbergh, when he was a young man, now you can imagine if you have an experience of spending a lifetime with somebody who had these sort of issues, how it might affect you and you go into your next life. When you say, is everything the same? No, sometimes you have an experience and it makes you decide, I'm going to do something very different. So for Charles Lindbergh, he wrote about this in his final autobiography, his autobiography of values, as he titled it. He said that when he was wanting to choose who he was going to be married to, that one of the main things that he had in his mind was he wanted to make sure that this person was not mentally imbalanced, he said.
Subtle hint.
Yes. And he even said, you know, he thought maybe he would even get this person's, you know, get their medical history. And check on all the people that were in
their family tree.
Yes, and make sure that there's no history of mental imbalance.
Instability.
Yes. Isn't that amazing? You know, this is
I think that's a hoot.
Yes. And but you think, you know, this is what happens for us. You know, there's some things that we just assume. You know, I remember assuming things when I was a kid, and I would talk to other kids, and they assumed just very different things, and they were just about general aspects of life.
Oh, yeah.
And where did these assumptions come from? Where did these choices come from? Where do these ways of thinking, you know, where we just, you know, so we get somebody, you know, there'll be a teacher standing in front of you when you're in second grade telling you something, and you're sitting there with your arms crossed over your chest just saying, you know, that's not true. I just know that's not true. You know.
Oh, yes. I had that about religion, by the way.
Yes.
And I was raised Catholic.
Yes.
But I was very, there were certain things that were taught to me, and I'd sit there and think, no.
Yes.
and yet, you know, there were just, I'm so sorry, certain, I'm getting all choked up. I wonder what that problem is about. Talk about Freudian slips, huh? what prior life do you have that would steer you towards, for example, writing, going into this history?
You know, I think that it's just something that is a powerful thing to share. I know in this lifetime I just had a desire to want to help people the way that I had been helped. And, you know, that's a good question as far as what might have been in the past life. Sometimes people have asked me, did you know Lincoln in the past life? Do you think you did? And I have to say can't say for sure. I don't know for sure. But
my feeling is not personally. I think you knew of him.
Yes.
And I think you admired him.
Yes, that's quite possible.
And you may have been in the government, but I don't think you were on a day-to-day basis.
That's possible, too. What I felt for myself was that maybe since I have such a strong connection with the path of yoga, and we could see, you know, Abraham Lincoln when he was a young man, for instance, just to give one example of the many connections with yoga, there's a teaching in yoga called pranayama, and it means energy control. And great yogis in the Himalayas, there are records of this, who can do amazing things physically with their bodies.
Yes, I'm familiar with that.
Yes, they could lift heavy boulders and move them and do things like that. And when Lincoln was a young man, he did a lot of the same thing. He carried a 600-pound chicken coop. He lifted a box of rocks with a few ropes. there's one trick that he liked to do. Even he did it as a young man, and he did it when he was president. He would take an axe with a very heavy axe head on the end of it. And, you know, in the 1800s, metallurgy wasn't nearly as advanced as it is now.
Yeah.
So those axe heads were like iron. They were very, very heavy and much heavier than
the Yes, I'm familiar with it, yes.
Yeah, so he would take it and he would hold the axe by the end of the handle and have it down at his side, and then he would slowly raise it up until it was parallel and it was a direct line between his shoulder and the end of the axe head. Now, if you've never done this, you have no idea how hard that is to do. And he looked tall and thin. He was actually built a lot like I am. I'm tall and thin. But and he didn't look like he would be able to do something like that, but he had amazing control of the energy in his body. He showed a past life mastery, or to some degree, of this ability of pranayama that we're talking about. And other men who watched him do that were more burly and looked like weightlifter types, you know, who might be able to do that, but they weren't able, none of them were able to do it, but Lincoln could do it. So that's just to give one example. But anyway, just this thought of Lincoln having been a Himalayan yogi, and my own interest in yoga, whenever people ask me if I knew Lincoln, I thought, well, maybe I had known him in the Himalayas. Maybe our caves were not that far from each other or something. You know, maybe he was cave number 103 and I was
number 102.
Yeah. But,
so you believe you were in Tibet also?
Well, I believe that that yoga was not unfamiliar to me, and especially Yogananda, my spiritual teacher. When I first saw his face on the cover of the autobiography of Yogi, there was something about his eyes and the line of his nose that looked just so familiar. I used to keep him at the side of my bed, and I was just a young man when I first became interested in all this. I used to just go out and have fun and party like everyone else, and I would come home with this headache and just feeling very uncentered, and I would look at his picture on the cover, and I would just sort of talk to him mentally and say, well, just stick with me, you know. I'll get through this. I'll improve myself. Someday I'll be more in along the lines of that. I know you would gladly lead me along. That would be for my best benefit. And eventually, I was able to. You know, well, actually, not very long after that, I was able to really dive into the spiritual life, and very grateful for it. But I do feel a strong connection with Yogananda, and the path of yoga too. It just makes complete sense to me, as well, as the teachings.
I felt very familiar with yoga, but I took ballet as a child, and I didn't realize till I was in my 20s, maybe 30s, that the ballet warm-up exercises that I learned, I was taught by a woman who was who recently died at 99 years of age, would you believe? A ballet teacher, Madame Timai, and she was taught in the Russian school of ballet. And I did not realize that I was learning to do yoga exercises in the warm-up of ballet.
Yes.
And so I was kind of surprised to know that I knew yoga. Mm-hmm. It was something just very natural to me. And then I remembered it was something I had learned as a child, and I thought, well, geez, that's so easy.
Yeah.
I've always been drawn to mysticism, but not religion is familiar to me, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Yes.
But I've always been very firm about certain teachings that the church taught as I was growing up, and I just knew from the very core of my being it was not true.
Yes.
It was wrong.
Yes.
And in fact, I would have, once or twice I had, being meek and mild, by the way, believe it or not, I was not an extroverted child, basically. And I didn't buck authority but a few times in my life. But when I did, man, I bucked all the way to town. But I told a good nun that, because my mother was not a Catholic, and at that point, we were told that anybody who wasn't a Catholic was going to go to hell. And I just stood up and said, I don't care what anybody said. Yeah. I didn't care if it was the Pope. I didn't care. Her jaw was like down to here. Yeah. I didn't care who was. My mother was going to heaven. There was no ifs, ands, or buts about it, and I didn't care what anybody else said, but that's what's going to happen. My mother's going to heaven, period, end of sentence, sat down. Yeah. And I never again argued with her about anything, you know? Having said my piece.
Yes. You drew the line in the sand. You let them know where you were coming
Well,
from.
Yes, I knew my mother was going to heaven, and she did. I saw her soul leave her body when she died.
Ah, yeah.
I was sitting right beside her.
Mm-hmm.
And I just saw her soul leave, and then I saw her turn and walk through the garden up into some steps into the light. So I know where my mother went.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that must have been a beautiful experience.
Pardon?
That must have been a beautiful experience.
It was one of the hardest things in my life to do was to let her go.
Yes.
I let her go with love.
Yes.
And I can tell you it broke my heart.
Mm.
And I went through such grieving. I mean, we say we have life partners.
Yes.
Or your soul companion. Well, your soul companion can be any number of people.
That's true.
And it's not necessarily. And I do believe that my soul mate in that kind of instance was my mother.
Yes, yes, I believe that too. That there are many kinds of soulmates, actually.
Exactly.
And very few of them have to do with romance.
Exactly.
They have to do with all very powerful things, because we were talking about the soul, and that's the spirit and the spirituality. And
helping us each achieve, help each other along the path.
Yes, that's right. That's right. When you have somebody like that, then we want to develop that and just allow it to flow forward and each helping each other, and it's a beautiful
thing. Well, absolutely. My mom was my... greatest friend, and I just respected her, and she was my role model, and all that good stuff, and I just missed her something fierce. It's like a part of me just left the planet with her.
Yes.
And it took a long while for me to recover, as a matter of fact.
Yes.
And I still think of her almost daily, but this time without sorrow.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still, I just think she was the neatest person. She was just a real lady born and bred, and just a real lovely human being. And I can't say more than that about anybody.
Yes.
But at any rate, since we're coming down to the wire,
yes.
What other information would you like to impart? Would you like to also give again your contact information?
Yes, that would be fine. And I think the listeners, again, if you would be interested in getting the book, you can get it through my website, which is lincolnreincarnation.com. And as I mentioned earlier, there is a special offer on that webpage. The book is $16.95, but there's an offer of bonus gifts adding up to about $132, including a free past life reading through numerology and a free past life consultation with myself. And so they might be interested in checking that out. Again, it's lincolnreincarnation.com.
Okay. And I will leave some of my contact information, and then when we do finally get the goodbye signal, at least we know we've provided everything to everyone. Again,
yes.
If someone wants to share, we still have a few minutes to share.
Mm-hmm.
And let us know what you think. If anybody out there has read this book, I have. I've enjoyed it, and I would recommend it as reading. It's not something you can sort of toss off with apples. But, you know, it's something that you want to think about, because it does challenge your mind to follow the format in which it's written. But it is a good book. It's a good story. It causes you to think a great deal. And if you had to like Lincoln, and I'm very fond of the man,
yes.
And admired him greatly, then this is a great book for you. At any rate,
But, you know, also, too, if you really admire Lincoln, it's helpful to see him in just think of the thought that instead, you know, most of us think the last thing that happened to Lincoln was that he was assassinated, and there's this great sorrow and this wounding that happened to America through that. But if you were to realize it through this, that it's quite possible that his spirit passed into the light, you know, after leaving that body, that he went through the deep spine, as they say, in the path of yoga, and went up through the tunnel and into the light, and went into an astral world where all of his good works and so on could free his spirit, as we see when the change from the life of Lincoln to Lindbergh. Lincoln
sure.
suffered from melancholy, but Lindbergh didn't have that difficulty.
Right.
And he is like he has been freed from all the good things that Lincoln did in his life.
Yes, he enjoyed a very healthy body, just
yes.
like Lincoln did for the first part of his life.
Yes.
But you're absolutely right.
Yes.
And
That actually Lincoln, even though the country went through the difficulties, that his spirit actually received the joy that was his own right for.
It was a job well done, is what it was.
Yes, yes. You can imagine the sort of celebration that happened in the astral world when he
yes.
came into the astral world, and the colors and the light and the beautiful sound.
And also we have to remember also while you're speaking of this and.
Yes.
Let me just say first that I'm Phyllis Pricer. This is Multiple Pathways, and that's Multiple Pathways, Inc. is my website. You can look me up there, or you can reach me on my email, psychicworlds, and the numeral 4, at AOL.com. Be glad to talk to you or respond to your emails if you have suggestions or want to get in contact with this lovely gentleman. You can email me. I can certainly provide you contact information to reach him via email if you like. We have some more guests coming next week. We look forward to hearing from you all and hope you all enjoy yourselves and have a lovely fourth for next week. Meanwhile, let's get back to our lovely gentleman here. Business first, pleasure next. You know, there are no accidents. That's
yes.
what I was going to say.
Yes.
And it was his time to go. It may not have been the time we would all want to go, but he had, in essence, accomplished what he had set out to do, which was to end the war.
Yes, his life missions were accomplished.
And it was indeed, and any time he had after that, quite frankly, was a give me.
Yes, yes. You know, in fact, Lindbergh's life, yes, so much was given to him, so many blessings in his life. He didn't have to worry about money. He was able to travel the world.
Yes.
Both men had wanderlust, and Lincoln had to curb that as president, but
yes.
Lindbergh was able to travel all over the world. He had a free, open visa, open pass anywhere he wanted to go. And
yes.
he was able to do the things that Lincoln wanted to do and wasn't able to do because of the constrictions of his life.
Of his office, right.
Yeah.
And I think that's another thing that is just so wonderful, to know that when we have to give up something in one life or there is a restriction, shall we say, or a temporary suspension of our desires, we can, in actual fact, come again and
yes.
have that desire fulfilled.
Yes.
It
fact,
isn't necessary. We're not here just the one time and either make it or break it on the first time around, but
yes.
that we have the opportunity.
Yes, there's plenty of time for everything to become resolved, for every desire, because the law of desire, too, it's a commitment of energy from the heart to the
mm-hmm.
universe. And whenever you have that commitment of energy, the law of it is that it either must be fulfilled or transcended.
Mm-hmm.
And so even if it's for an ice cream cone, you know, or to marry a particular person or
mm-hmm.
whatever it might be, at some point in the long halls and reaches of time, that particular desire must find fulfillment or, as I said, be transcended in deep inner communion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I quite agree. Mm-hmm. So, did you ever tell us what you think you were in your lifetime prior to this? Were you a writer, perhaps? Or were you a scribe?
You know, maybe. I don't know.
Or even still, a historian.
Yes, yes. I seem to have this love of history. And
yes.
I think it comes out in my book, very
yes.
much fascinated with a different viewpoint of history, we might
exactly.
say.
Exactly. That's what I noticed, that
yes.
you looked at it from a different standpoint, which I thought was very interesting,
yeah.
by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So I say, yes, 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 yes. Isn't it fun? I just love doing the show because I have the wonderful opportunity to share with people and to learn so much and to grow and experience new ideas, new thoughts, I think this is a perfect job for me.
Yes, I agree completely. And, that's one thing I love, too, about being on these shows, is just to have, find that I have a spiritual friend that I can connect with, and we can share not just with each other. It's just so wonderful the way the things are set up now with the radio and the Internet and so on, that we can share with many, many other people who are interested as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. I just... I am, although I have no intention of paying $500.